Broads Media.
Yo, fellas, before we dive into the show with Mark Farzetta and I want to let you know that we recorded this on Wednesday night before the Phillies game. So anything that happened in that second loss with Zach Wheeler, Rhys Hoskins, Joe Girardi's decision, that did not happen yet, but still so much damn fun talking about this Phillies team and where they are, even though it sucks because they're miserable. Just a lot of fun with Farzy. So I hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much.
Ooh, I'm so jealous of you taking that coffee sip.
Was that this is water. This is that's why I drink espresso. Because
you're doing it in the coffee mug. Like that's a violation in my opinion. You don't get water in the coffee mug.
You're right. You don't. I definitely drink water out of it though.
An asshole you are. I'm glad that I'm recording this. I'm going to use it as like the opening.
You better be using this. This stays in the damn show. If you told me I had to keep my drunk ass in my show the last time you and I talked, then this stays in.
All right, well, then at this point, I guess what I'll say here is welcome on in, everybody, to Schmoozed. What we're going to do, see, I had this whole game plan of I was just going to go attack mode. Normally, I like to ask questions, get to know you. I don't want to know you. I just want to fire off into this whole Phillies drama, but I'll get to know you anyway. What's up, Farzy?
What's up, brother? No, this is just my billboard, this coffee mug, this water mug. That's all that is. Yeah, it's just my billboard. So when I go like this, people see, the Farzy Show, no way.
I don't like water. I don't like saying the word water. And I don't know, maybe even when I went away, see, there's a lot of things I say because I play junior hockey with kids from Minnesota, Chicago, Canada, Russia. And if I say home or phone, they would be like, dude, you sound like an idiot. What are you saying? But like, I hear my buddies around here say water, and I think, dude, you sound like an idiot. It's water. I just don't understand.
I find it endearing, and I find that I like a lot of people actually. I feel like I go back and forth. Like if you ask me in an isolated like question, like, "Hey, what liquid flows in a river?" I will say water. But anything that if it's of like bottle of water, glass of water, mug of water, what I don't know, mug of water. I will go water in that regard. But everything else, water, absolutely. But yeah, I find it fine. I think it makes us endearing to other people that show our little colloquialisms around the world.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is. They're all going home like, yeah, I had this awesome teammate of mine, Water. I'm just going to start saying it because I love it.
He was charming. He was charming. That was charming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure after I'm road raging on the way to practice, like, yo, jerk off. Yo, hitting the horn. Yeah, this kid's great. Can't wait to be like him. Yeah. Anyway.
Now, that's a Philly colloquialism, too.
Yes. No, okay. Well, let's transition into the Phillies. And I want to reference your outstanding show, The Farzy Show, because you had Matt Breen on, who covers the Phillies, and I saw a beautiful graphic on your Twitter page, and it somewhat made my blood boil, not because of what he said. He was right with what he said, but it's really more about the team. So Matt Breen states that Rhys Hoskins is the heartbeat of this squad, and he's not wrong. But Farzy, to me, that's a problem. He's hitting .247 with 26 homers. It's a good season. 70 RBIs. It's a good season. If a good season is your heartbeat, you're just absolutely screwed as a baseball team, and I think that's exactly why you see basically .500 baseball.
Yeah, and I also think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the manager's heartbeat hasn't really been there either, and I thought he was going to be the guy to kind of come in and be like, clear, and then give you that push to get through the end of August and through September, which has been the Phillies' biggest problem over the last 10 years. Other than grooming talent. But in terms of heartbeat, in terms of inspiration, in terms of emotional leadership, it just hasn't been there at all for the Phillies. But as far as Rhys Hoskins go, to get back to your point, Hoskins to me is a good baseball player. He's left a lot to be desired because he started out so damn well. So I know you could work in the phrase victim of his own success, but still he should be better than what he is right now. And I almost get a vibe, even though, and this says, I think, a lot about Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia likes Rhys Hoskins more than they liked Bobby Abreu. And Bobby Abreu is 10 times a better ball player than Rhys Hoskins. The reason I bring that name up is because when the Phillies started winning, who did Pat Gillick trade away? Bobby Abreu, because he needed a changing of the guard. He needed a better leader to take over. The problem here is that there's no young guy younger than Rhys Hoskins that's willing to take over this team in the leadership role, but they need a better player to be able to do that, and they need a better leader to be able to do that. having Rhys Hoskins is fine because unlike Abreu, I think he at least wants that leadership mantra because this is his team. Bryce Harper, I think, still feels a little bit like a mercenary that he was hired gun to come in here to Philadelphia on big money. He'll play with emotion. And he'll be a leader on the field. As a matter of fact, that's also what Matt Breen said. JT Realmuto, the same type of thing, but at least he'll say something to try to get this team going, similar to what he said after the Arizona Diamondbacks series before they went into San Diego and took two or three from the Padres. But with Rhys, it feels like he's willing to play. He wants to play. I think a lot of players wouldn't even get that at bat in last night. I think a lot of players would still be on the IL. A lot of players still wouldn't be feeling up to playing yet. But I think Rhys wants to be in there. I think the team, the management, the front office is holding him back from playing more. Everything about Rhys Hoskins' mindset, mentality, all that, I love. I just wish he was a better ball player. And I think if he was a better ball player, we'd be feeling a lot better about this Phillies team as well and their leadership group right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, since the Bryce Harper era began, you've basically seen the same brand of baseball, which pisses me off because, quite frankly, it's not good enough. But you have the name. See, the thing is, if you individually look at these players, I think you got a nice roster on paper, but there's something about the meshing of them that just doesn't work, and it's not going to be acceptable, so you have to make some sort of change. Now, I demanded that they sold at the deadline, even though I knew they weren't really going to, but I'm just taking a few steps back and objectively viewing what's going on here. I always mention trading Rhys, and then fans get upset with me because it's like, do you see his power? It's like, I want to trade him because he's actually bringing back value, because he right. can actually bring you back something in return. I don't know what route Dave Dombrowski goes, but for me, just going back to the heartbeat thing, he is the heartbeat. But I also think the problem with this team is he's your heartbeat at the same time. If Rhys is your heartbeat, I think you got a problem.
You need a couple of Red Bulls to really get that heartbeat going. You know, a couple of espressos to get that heartbeat going. And then you could be talking about a team that could actually make some noise. But, I mean, I think part of it also goes into, again, this last month of the season, this last month or, you know, what, 5 weeks now of the season. Really, for me, I think what it comes down to is they need somebody to get them going. They need somebody to really start pumping their hearts a little bit here make sure that they can go through September with some kind of, you know, I don't know, emotional drive, push, whatever it might be, motivation. They need somebody to really be able to get them going, and I don't see anybody on this roster doing
it. But Farzi, isn't that a little bit of what you paid Bryce Harper to be? Like, I love Bryce, right? Mm-hmm. He's having an amazing season. His OPS at one point was basically third in the league.
Yeah.
He was going through a tear. The power numbers, home runs wise, weren't there. But then as of late, that started to pick up really well. But this part of the leadership and all that, isn't that what you paid Bryce Harper to be? And I'm not trying to knock him. I'll pay that contract every day of the week. But like, that's why you paid him.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying earlier. When it comes to on the field, I think he does whatever it takes. I think he hustles his ass off. I think he's a real gamer in all that regard. But when it comes to that in-clubhouse, gotta-say-something type guy, I almost get the impression from Bryce Harper that he still steps back and lets Rhys Hoskins do that because Rhys has simply been here longer and came up through the organization. When I think Bryce Harper almost has to take, and I said this on the show this morning, I think Bryce Harper almost has to take that Pete Rose type of angle. And come in and be like, wait a minute, does everyone here realize how good they really are? JT Realmuto, Rhys Hoskins, like, do you realize how good we can really be? Aaron Nola, do you know how much guys, like, the old story is that Pete Rose is the guy that came in and had to tell Mike Schmidt how damn good he was before the Phillies won anything. And I feel like Bryce Harper has to be that same type of guy. Pete Rose went to Mike Schmidt and said, you know how scared pitchers are to face you around this league? Let's get it going, man. I feel like he almost needs to do the same thing with Aaron Nola, or could have done the same thing with Aaron Nola earlier in the season by saying, Knowles, do you know how guys don't want to face you in this league if it's your day pitching? I think the same thing needs to be said to Rhys Hoskins. Hey, Rhys, do you know how scared pitchers are when you step into the batter's box? Let's get that going. And I just feel like for whatever reason with Bryce, I almost get the sense he doesn't want to overstep his leadership little corner that he's in, which is, oh no, I got to be on the guy on the field that's just, you know, busting his ass every single day and making sure he's putting forth an old college try of 110%. And Rhys will be the vocal guy. And if Rhys isn't there, I'll let it go to the catcher, JT Realmuto. And I'll just be the guy that makes sure he gives 110% every time he's out there.
You know what? I don't accept that, honestly. I really don't. Like, I'm disappointed in Bryce Harper if that's what he is. And I want a little bit more of, and I say this in a good way, even though it might come off negative, but I want more of that Bryce Harper, Jonathan Papelbon, like feistiness. I want some attitude. I want some swag. Like he with in a negative way, I'm going to say this. He's like too professional. I want some attitude. I want swagger. I just don't think he brings as much of that as I thought he did. And unfortunately, he's growing up. And then maybe the kid played a role in the You know what I'm saying? You get a kid. Maybe you don't feel like punching your teammate in the face anymore. I don't know. But that's what we need out of him. And then real quick, offensively, though, I looked up the numbers. So I'm rounding, but it makes sense. 25th in the league without Reese in the lineup, runs scored per game. 14th in the league with him in the lineup. So I bring this up, though, because while that's a big jump, I feel people believe that this offense is elite with Reese in it. It's average as average can be with Reese in it. You are a 500. You're in the middle. You're literally in the middle with Reese. It's just so disgusting without him. I don't want people to lose sight of that and think the offense is better than what it really is with Reese available.
Mm-hmm. No, I think because of the home run numbers that have been there, and I've been one of the people to be like, Reese needs to hit more home runs, and he's been doing that this year, and I think he's on pace for his, well on pace for his second 30-plus home run season. And the only thing that scares me with all this is that when we were asking for that, we were also asking him to keep that on-base percentage up there. And I think over the last couple of months, the on-base percentage has been up there for Reese Hoskins. But still, overall the season, you're looking at it and you're going, that's not a Reese Hoskins number. If he can somehow keep that number and keep on raising that number, that on-base percentage, and obviously hitting for average, because guys in the middle of the order still have to hit for average as well. I know everyone only talks about on-base percentage, but those guys are paid to drive in runs. Those guys are paid to make sure runs are happening. So that only happens when you're driving in runs. You're not going to walk to the plate and start walking in runs with the bases loaded every single time. You want that guy to swing the bat and make contact. Reese has done that this year in terms of the power numbers. Everything else has been stuff that you have just been trying to, again, pump life into throughout the season. But when it comes to him and that on base, it's just a confusing thing because you still want him to be able to not make outs, leave it for the next guy. Hopefully that next guy could drive in runs. And one of the most disappointing things, I know he's had his injury issues, one of the most disappointing things all season long has been Didi Gregorius. Where's the power from this guy? Where's the on-base percentage from this guy? Where's the average from this guy? He has had an extremely disappointing year based off of how he came into the fold with the Phillies last year during the pandemic and all that. Had a great year at shortstop for him. I was really hoping he could build off that for this year. If he's half the player he was last year, this Phillies team isn't looking up at the Braves at this point in the season. They're going to be looking down at the Braves at this point in the season. But overall, the lineup has been a disappointment. Injury has played a lot in that. When they have been healthy as of recently, you've been able to count on the lineup a little bit more, with the exception of that Diamondback series, and of course yesterday against the first game of the series against Tampa Bay. But overall, they need that shot in the arm to get him going, and just not sure who's going to actually go out there and do it.
Yeah, with Didi, it feels like every time he's up to bat and he does get hit by a pitch, it's on the elbow or it's on the forearm. And I just wonder, like, this guy's been a professional for so many years. For him to be hitting .211 and for him to be hitting worse than that, I just wonder how much of this is he's just battling through as many injuries as he is. And quite frankly, he's having a difficult time coming around on that. And yeah, we're recording this before that second Tampa Bay Rays game, so we don't know where Reese Hoskins is going to be slotted. But I want to get your thoughts on the way.
I'll give you two reactions. You can just insert. Like, you believe Reese? That guy sucks. Trade his ass negligence. I don't even want him back next year.
That's amazing.
But two, Reese Hoskins finally did it. He got this. They got him going. Played the entire game in this amazing 11 inning affair. Oh, they're back, baby. They're going to beat the Braves.
Perfect. Beautiful. Great. But see, I normally am. My big phrase this year with this team was they lack sense of urgency. Joe always worried about five games ahead. And that's fine in May, June, July. But when it becomes August and you're in a race, you saved all of your players for August. So that's when you put your foot on the gas.
They're playing scared. They're playing scared. Right now, though, is the overall thing.
I feel like I gave you the numbers, right, about Reese and their run scored per game. Like, they see this. They see this data. They see this information. Maybe I'm being an idiot. Maybe I'm being naive. But
no way.
I would have to imagine that they know all of these numbers that we see to the point where there's got to be something seriously wrong with Reese, where they feel having him in, thrown in there periodically, is better than forcing an issue and then shutting him down for the rest of the year. So I don't know if this is a lack of sense of urgency or is this just, look, he's really, really banged up. And that's what they're trying to tell you by the way he's in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, I that's what I think they're doing because they, I mean, yes, to answer your question, they know the numbers. They not only do they know the numbers, Broads, they know like the temperature and the the dew point of the day those numbers happened, like through every pitch. Like there's no stone left unturned when it comes to the analytics and all the information they provide hitters in baseball. And I was talking to Charlie Manuel the other day who was on the show, and Charlie said he wanted to host a show between old school baseball guys and analytics guys. And I was like, where's the popcorn machine? Because I'm watching that, man. And I look at all the numbers and all the information provided to hitters, and it seems like it's almost too much. And Charlie had the same opinion. But when it comes to this particular team and when it comes to figuring out how they apply these numbers with Rhys Hoskins and who they're going to have come off the bench if it's not Hoskins, bottom line is, who would you rather have come up in the ninth inning with the final out and the game on the line than anybody else off the bench if Rhys Hoskins is on your bench already? So that's why Rhys is coming off the bench. As I said earlier, I don't think Rhys is healthy enough to really play right now. I think he really wants to play. I think he's telling the team, hey, look, if you got to put me out there sparingly, put me out there sparingly. But right now, I want to play. If he has an opportunity like he does last night, that's exactly what the Phillies' plan is. Hopefully, we see him in the lineup more often. But the other aspect of this is that I just thoroughly believe that the Phillies are playing scared. And I think Joe Girardi is managing scared. And I know they won the game where Matt Moore was pitching incredible baseball and they took him out of the game no matter what he was pitching. He had a no-hitter going. Like, that to me is still playing scared. Oh, we got to be careful we don't injure him. Like, it's not a foregone conclusion that he's going to get injured. Like, it's like people talk about preseason football. Oh, what if he gets hurt? Well, it's football. People get hurt. I get it. But in baseball, it's the same thing. Any athlete, anyone who has to do physical labor for any job needs to know that, yeah, there's a possibility you get hurt. With Rhys, is he healthy or is he not healthy? Is sitting him out another week going to guarantee that he's going to come back maybe in the last month of the season and go on a tear to be 100% healthy? Because if that's going to lend itself to actually being healthy the rest of the season and just letting him go, well, then sit him out another week. Don't just have him in and out of the lineup. Have some consistency. Baseball players are always creatures of habit. It's an insane thing, but I think more so than any other athlete, baseball players are always creatures of habit simply because they play 162 games. If you can give Rhys Hoskins normal at-bats and have him healthy, then why aren't you doing that? And it seems like they're forcing the square peg in the round hole right now with how they're handling Rhys Hoskins, how they handle injuries in general. It looks like they are playing and managing, in Joe Girardi's case, scared. And that's okay. What I hate about the way they're going to end this season.
No, for sure. And there's some things I want to push back on a little bit. Just the Matt Moore one specifically. So
yeah.
To be fair, I don't like how Joe has handled this season. I think it's pretty clear that it's been underwhelming based off of what we thought was going to happen. But it reminds me a little bit of, I'm just looking at it from, okay, let's say, and I don't believe they're going to do this. It's more just hypothetical. You move on from Joe Girardi and next year looks the same. You're telling me Gabe Kapler, Joe Girardi, and the next guy all look the same? I mean, at what point is it now? When they were winning baseball games, no one questioned Joe. Why? The offense stepped up and the players played better. Everyone says, well, Joe Girardi managed a championship caliber team. He didn't have to do anything. Well, that kind of proves my point that if your talent's good, Joe Girardi can get the job done. Now, Hall of Famers in the bullpen, this and that. I got you. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But,
right.
You know, the impact of a manager, I think, gets somewhat really intense when things get ugly. And there's
it gets inflated.
I got you. Right. But I guess with the Matt Moore one, it's Matt Moore. I'm okay with yanking him in the sixth inning of a no-hitter because the track record tells me he's a disaster. And I even supported I don't know if it was injury-based. I guess my point is it's more just you got six scoreless innings out of Matt Moore. Hey, let's get to the bullpen here. But the Aaron Nola one, I want to get your thoughts on Aaron Nola's one because he put him in the ninth. There was a walk to Fernando Tatis Jr. and a 3-1 count. This is going back a couple days ago against the Padres. And there goes a 2-run home run after Nola had an absolute gem. I thought Joe had three options. And I actually liked all three options. It was either let Aaron Nola go. He had 100 pitches after eight. So going in the ninth, he had 100. Once you realize someone gets on base, you go to Ian Kennedy, who threw 30 pitches the night before, may I add. Or you put Cronenworth on first base once it's a 3-1 count, and Austin Nola is up the bat, who Aaron Nola has won the battle more times than not that night. And you go, Austin, Aaron, have at it, fellas. Go aboard. All three would have been okay with me, but I want to get your thoughts on what he did on that Aaron Nola start.
I was surprised a little bit that he actually let Aaron Nola go into the ninth inning, considering he was coming up to bat in the eighth inning, and it was a tight ball game. And when
that's
I saw
a big
Aaron,
at bat though,
that's a huge at bat.
Big at bat.
I was shocked. So Nola gets the at bat, obviously, and he drives a double in the right center field gap. So all right, you got that going for you. The other thing that was interesting about that was, I think if there was going to be a point where you're going to take Aaron Nola out and there wouldn't be much of a counter argument to doing it, it would have been him getting on base in that inning in particular, because you needed runs. I thought he might have pinch run for him in that moment. So you see him go out there and he gets on the bases. He ends up scoring, comes around the whole thing. And I'm thinking, oh, well, he's definitely going to take him out now. There's no way he's going to pitch in the ninth inning now. I'd love to see it, but I doubt it's going to happen. And it happened. I think the minute you got somebody on base, considering Aaron Nola had also just rounded them, and this is why I'm so on board with the DH now. I used to hate it. Now I'm like, just screw it. Just give it to me now. Damn it. Is because I think that he was just gassed when he went out there. I thought he was cooked when he went out there.
Well,
and
to
when
be
you
fair,
saw the way
I saw 94 clock in on a fastball. He was throwing heat that day, 96, 95. I saw a 94 in the ninth, and I was a little blown away by that.
Yeah, but it's the speed is one thing. The life on it, the movement on the ball is what really will start to lag behind, unfortunately, for some pitchers in there. It's not necessarily the velocity. And that, you're right, he was popping the mitt 94, 95 miles an hour. But when it came to the life on the fastball, it looked like it was a little bit more flat than usual. It came down to the last out. So we're talking about a very close. So either way, you can absolutely justify how everything played out. In the beauty of hindsight, I think that he was leaking a little bit of gasoline, leaking a little bit of oil as that game went on. And that's rightfully so. I mean, talking about 117 pitches in the game throughout and rounded the bases in the inning before. I know it shouldn't matter, but it seems to matter to these guys. I was happy that he got the opportunity to pitch the ninth inning. I thought once he got into any semblance of trouble, considering what happened in the bottom of the top of the ninth inning, that's where I would have said, all right, you know what? Let me give this guy a break a little bit here. And that's not what they did. They just lost the game in extra innings.
Because I don't like the way Joe Girardi handled this season, but it seems like you might be a little bit more on the I really, 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 really don't like Joe Girardi thing. Would you fire Joe?
No, I wouldn't fire Joe. I mean, look, there's still a month left to go in the season. As the time we tape this, they're 4.5 games out. If they win today,
I meant at the end of the season, to be fair, not like today.
Hey, I know. But
Jersey wants you out of here.
See, here's the thing. You can't just go, 2 years, you're done. 2 years, you're done. I mean, what are we, the Flyers? So when it comes to this team, Joe Girardi was hired to be the difference. The names you mentioned before and talking about Gabe Kapler, right? Like, Gabe Kapler was never been a manager before except for, Double-A in the Red Sox organization. And he comes here to get his first real manager gig. And 2 years later, he's out because the players really aren't taking him seriously at that point. The curveball machine, oh my God. But then you go to Joe Girardi. And then look, even under Pete McCann, this team had collapses in the second half of the season. And even Charlie Manuel's, the latter stages of his career here in Philadelphia, this team folded down the stretch. And I'm not even going to bring up Ryan Sandberg. But Joe Girardi was hired because he was the experienced guy. Joe Girardi was hired because he was supposed to be the guy to push you over the edge. If he's not fired at the end of this year, I know I wouldn't fire him at the end of this year, because I think that just starts, you can't have a rotating door, revolving door of managers. I give him this next season, I give him next year and say, Joe, this is the make or break year. You were hired to be the guy that was different from Gabe Kapler, different than Pete McCannon. You were hired to be the guy to push this team over the edge. And a month ago, when the Phillies were red hot and winning, 8 games in a row, I was saying, this is where Joe Girardi has to be the difference. He has to be the guy, assuming people stay healthy, and that didn't happen with Reese, but assuming people stay healthy, he has to be the guy to make sure this team keeps on winning, because every other manager over the last decade has allowed this team to let any momentum slip away towards the end of the season, and that's what we're seeing right now. Hopefully they recapture it. They still have an opportunity to do it, but this is where Joe Girardi will justify being hired. This is where Joe Girardi will justify his own resume in getting hired here in Philadelphia. And this is where Joe Girardi is supposed to be able to make his money as a guy that could be a leader as a manager of this ball club.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you say there. I think it's very valid. I just want to play the other side because I like to do that. Heading into this year, didn't we think this team was like a 500 baseball team or so? Yeah. Maybe just a tick above 86, 85 wins or so.
Absolutely.
If that's what you get, are we asking Joe Girardi to do something that's not real? Like, that's what we knew this team was, and he's getting you where that team was. So I'm just putting it into perspective for next year. What if the team is just not good, and they're once again in this area, and we're now demanding Joe Girardi to do something that is unfortunately out of his hands? Now, Dave Dombrowski with the Odubel situation, Andrew McCutchen and the club option, there's going to be some things that, you know, make it fresher, hopefully, and some moves that change what's happening here. He already made some front office moves, player development moves that will hopefully benefit this franchise. But it comes back to, like, what did we expect from this team? And where we are is somewhat what is, like, it's the same, no? So how much can we demand Joe to do more than what is handed to him? The chef in the kitchen and the cook and the, you know.
Well, I mean, the other part of that is if you do get to the end of next season, if you get to the end of the next season, if you get to August, September, and things look exactly the same or things look a lot worse, then you're talking about lighting a match and blowing it up. I mean, that's really what you're going to be talking about at that point. So it's not just going to be Joe Girardi's job on the line. You're going to be talking about probably charging Dave Dombrowski with just doing a complete overhaul of rebuilding this team. And that that's the overall point of it's not just Joe Girardi. It's the talent level of this team, which, yes, to your point, always overrides what the manager has going on. Because if you hit, guess what? That manager looks pretty good. It's like in basketball. If you're hitting, you know, 60% of your shots, that coach is going to look pretty good. This Phillies team, if they're not hitting, they're not looking good. If the bullpen's not closing out games, they're not looking good. If the arms aren't striking guys out and getting outs in general, this team's not looking good even a little bit, neither is the manager. But with Joe, I don't put it all on him, but he was supposed to be the guy to turn this corner. He was supposed to be the guy to let Rhys Hoskins go in the final month of the season. He was supposed to be the guy to make sure JT Realmuto was staying on top of his game towards the end of the season. Bryce Harper, the same thing. Aaron Nola, this whole pitching staff, the whole bullpen, managing that. He was supposed to be the difference. And when you talk about expectations at the start of the year versus now, from the minute they throw the first pitch of the season, all preseason predictions go out the window, as far as I'm concerned. Because you don't know who's injured. You know how long they're injured for. You don't know who's having a good year, who's having a bad year, who's having the surprising season. I mean, think about this for a second. Was Alec Bohm supposed to be this bad? Like, before the season, we thought Alec Bohm was actually going to do that. Runners with scoring in position, was the best hitters in baseball with runners in scoring position this year. This year, he could barely hit over 250, like, with runners in scoring position. And he has no pop in his bat. He goes down. Do you mean to tell me Ronald Torres was on your prediction list this year for some clutch hits that he's had this season? I think it comes down to this. Are they numerically, record-wise, around where we thought they'd be? Absolutely. Has Joe helped and hurt this team as the season has gone on? Of course he has. Every manager does that, no matter how good a manager you are. But when it comes to the guys that have already been through here, managerially speaking, Joe was supposed to be the difference maker. I haven't seen a big difference in this team, and I'm hoping that changes in this final month of the season.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. And I like to look at it from, like, I'm a big outside of just the Phillies baseball watcher. I don't know how many Phillies fans do that. I have the MLB TV package, so I'm watching Yankees games on Yes Network. I'm watching the Padres every night at 10 o'clock, or the Dodgers or the Giants. I love that NL West. Yankees fans want Boone fired every day. They win 11 straight games. Boone's the best manager in the world. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it's just, of course.
But it's two totally different circumstances.
Oh, are they hitting? Are those Yankees hitting?
Yeah, that's how it works. But you read my mind with Alec Bohm. I wanted to get there because there's two philosophies on how to handle this. You just play him every day and say, dude, you got to work yourself out of this jam. You're in a funk. You're right with he has no power in his bat. Everything's somewhat a single hit the other way.
Right.
His foot is clearly, like, his timing is way off with these fastballs. He's always
He's a close to 300 hitter. Like, it's amazing. Like, yeah. Considering the not including the first 2 months of the season, he's turned it around with his bat. It's turned his batting average. But yeah, it's like spray hits, and that's not what you're paying. Like, you're paying him anything. That's not why he's in the big leagues. That's not why he was, like, in the big leagues with a bullet coming up from the minors.
So there's two ways to look at it. It's like, do you just let him play every day and learn on the fly as a young kid? Is this part of the problematic Phillies organization that don't know how to handle Spencer Howard, Ranger Suarez, Scott Kingery, or because everyone wants accountability? Accountability, Brett Brown. Accountability, Ben Simmons. Accountability, sure. Do your job. These are simple baseball plays that we're talking about. Simple, basic third baseman, turn your glove over and field the ground ball. He's not doing that. So, looking at it on the other side, We want accountability. Is this the right move? Because quite frankly, this is professional baseball and you're not doing your job. And he's putting his head down. His shoulders are slumped. You're 25. You're not 20. And this goes back to leadership as well. Who's saying to Alec Boehm, yo, dude, let's go, right? Like, let's pick your head up. Stop looking like you're moping. Stop looking like you're the Little League World Series kids after an error over a third base. There's so many angles to this, but we'll start here. Are you okay with what they did, or do you think that this describes sort of the dysfunction of the younger prospects?
Oh, no, I think it absolutely describes that. I liked what the Phillies were doing with Alec Boehm up until they said, okay, now go play first. Like, I don't know what it is with this Phillies team when it's like, oh, my God, we got this hotshot third baseman, Cody Ashe, okay? We got this hotshot third baseman. All right. This is how far
I did not have that name on my notes today.
That's how far back I go in my bitterness. Anyway, we got this great hotshot third baseman. He's going to be a great third baseman. All right, he gets to the majors. Put him in left field. I'm sorry, what? Put him in left field. Hey, Scott Kingery, we're going to guarantee you $27 million. You never even played in Major League Baseball yet. Hey, all right, you're a great second baseman. Go play center. I'm sorry, what was that? How far back? Like, we talked about Chase Utley playing left field. We talked about Chase Utley playing third base. It didn't happen. You know why? Because he couldn't play those positions. So he became a talent-wise Hall of Fame-worthy second baseman. I don't think he actually gets in. But talent-wise, he was that good at being second base and the power numbers he obviously put up as a second baseman at the plate. But when it comes to everything else, why do they always decide to mess with their prospects when they actually seem like they may have a prospect? There's no better time for you to ask this question, Broads, than right now. Do you know why? I'll tell you why. Because not only are they looking for a different player development, someone to be a director of player development right now in the organization, they have someone filling in on an interim basis with the changes they just made this week to the front office and their player development staff. But Spencer Howard opened his mouth again in Texas. And now Spencer Howard's not necessarily setting the world on fire since becoming a member of the Texas Rangers. Do you see what Spencer Howard said about this organization most recently? I mean, before he was laughing at it, this time around, he referred to the Phillies' way of getting him ready for the big leagues as trying to polish a turd.
Yep.
That's a direct quote from a big league ball player that was just a prospect 20 seconds ago in your organization. He said, I can either continue to do what they told me to do and polish that turd, or I can listen to this franchise that is now invested in me a little bit by trading for me, saying, we think we could reach your potential here, and here's how we're going to do it. So Spencer Howard could either say, these are the 20 messages the Phillies were giving me on how to get better, or I can listen to the Rangers tell me, this is how you get better, A to B to C. The way they've been developing talent, or at least attempting to in this organization, has been embarrassing. It's been a problem for a long, long time. So when it comes to Alec Boehm, I don't think the Phillies have a damn idea what they were doing. And to move him to first base out of necessity for Rhys Hoskins, when you have a developing player at third who's already struggling at the position he's been playing, I think is asking him way too much. As far as his bat, I don't think the Phillies are, even though it's not hitting for power, I don't think the Phillies can be too particular about who's in this lineup if the guy's hitting around 290 over the last 4 months of the season like he had been doing. That at least shows me he's putting bat on ball. And it's only going to be a matter of time before he gets some runners on base and he can drive in those runners. To me, I would have kept him at third base. And I think the way that they have been handling prospects for a long time here in Philadelphia, really ever since they've been trying to put new life into the post-Howard, Utley, Rollins era and Hamels era in Philadelphia, I think they've done an abysmal job of handling prospects. Every single one of them has been a disappointment, and a lot of it goes to how they have been handling them, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right. Michael Franco just got DFA'd by the Orioles. Odubel Herrera's kicking it around here. The previous era of Phillies baseball is almost out of the league. How unfortunate is that? The thing with Alec Boehm, though, is like I'm torn with this one because normally, like, I despise everything they do with all these prospects and all. But I mean, he was unplayable. Like, I actually genuinely believe, and I allow people to make mistakes. You're allowed to make an error. You're allowed. Mm-hmm. Like, Didi Gregorius, right? He is a veteran player that made so many damn mistakes out there, but I know he's better, and I know it's in there, and I know it's time. I think I threw this to you on your show when you had me on a few, I guess, months back or weeks back with Andrew McCutchen.
I don't remember.
Too many cold ones. But that was when Italy was playing some soccer, El Futebol.
Right. It was the Euro, so it was football.
Yes, that is correct. But out in left field, Andrew McCutchen, if you remember, there were balls that hit him in the hand and he would just drop. And he's going 0-for-5 now with 4 swinging strikeouts, 5 total strikeouts. But, like, it's Andrew McCutchen. I feel okay with that, and he'll eventually, you know, work himself out of this. With Boehm, like, his was so unplayable, and I don't know if he's fixable due to track record purposes that I don't know. Those mistakes were just on another level of disgusting and disgraceful and unwarranted that there's a bit of me that I'm okay with him not playing because, as I mentioned before, like, you got to show these kids at the same time, like, this is unacceptable and you can't play this way. And it's like, it's not just bad. Like, he was worse than just bad. I mean, you're talking basic fundamentals of baseball. And at some point you're going to keep running your head into a wall, or are you going to say, we got to figure this thing out. And maybe that's making plays at third base in AAA.
Yeah. And it could be. And he made one a couple of nights ago in AAA over the nice shoulder, over the shoulder grab while he was down there.
McCarthy, who, by the way,
oh, really?
Dude, I saw him tweet it out. Like, Alec Boehm made a great play, but I'll tell you what, I thought he was phenomenal. Like, I thought he did I didn't know what to expect. I don't listen to many Iron Pig games, with all due respect. Dude, I was like, wow. I was like thoroughly impressed with his broadcast. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I can't remember. It's got to be him. I know Tom McCarthy has a couple of boys, but I'm pretty sure he was drafted by the Phillies. Pat McCarthy. Yeah, do some Googling.
I'll do some Googling.
He was like, I want to say, one of them awesome baseball picks in like the 63rd round. I think he was drafted out of St. Joe's by the Phillies, by Ruben Amaro Jr., who was his broadcast partner throughout the couple of games that he did, obviously, in San Diego. And by the way, if you're going to break into broadcasting at the major league level, what better city to be? Oh, where are you sending me to do this? San Diego? Awesome. No, I thought he was great. I thought he had a great pace to him. I thought he was very comfortable. Chip off the old block as far as that goes in terms of being comfortable in the booth. I thought he was really good. I thought he did a great job. I thought it was a great major league debut for Pat McCarthy. Obviously a great family.
Is Tommy the other son?
I think so, maybe. Okay. Is that the one that was drafted?
It looks like back in 2015, Allentown's Tommy McCarthy selected it by the Phillies. How about that?
Little Tom and Tommy.
let's see here. I don't know. I have to keep whoa. Hold on a second. He was the 1,194th overall pick. Four spots away from becoming Mr. Irrelevant, a term for the person selected last in the draft. That's a slap in the fucking face, man. You're actually titled Mr. Irrelevant to be drafted last the draft?
Yeah, the NFL, man. The NFL always has a Mr. Irrelevant. Yeah.
I didn't even know. I mean, maybe that's how irrelevant they are. I didn't even know that there was a title to it.
Well, I think what's going to happen eventually is a bunch of homeroom moms and dads are going to complain about calling their son Mr. Irrelevant, or their daughter Mrs. Irrelevant, Miss Irrelevant. And then, you know, they're going to get away with that title because it's too offensive.
Yeah, you're probably right on the money there. Like Mr. Potato Head and Dr. Seuss. I got nothing. I think it's a great way to end the show. I mean, I think that's perfect. I got nothing else for you after that.
So it was his brother. His brother was drafted then, we think.
Okay. Yes, his brother was drafted. You know what? I think we're just going to wrap it up here. We got some 38 minutes of Phillies talk. I scream about the Phillies every day. Sometimes it blows my mind. I'm not going to lie. Like, you can tell, like, okay, after the Mets series, huge Red October vibes, right? Sure. Like,
yeah.
I break down, I'm not going to say 162, but maybe like 146 of 162. Sometimes I combine them together. Last night, there was maybe six people tweeting about the Phillies last night. And like, here I am talking about it for 42 minutes by myself. What am I doing with my life with this team? Sometimes I really question that.
Yeah, we both should have went into like pharmaceuticals or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I go to Walgreens all the time. They seem to make nice money. Yeah, you know, I got a white lab coat. If you wear a white coat, it seems like you're more professional than a Miller Lite t-shirt.
No.
Farzi, you go like, I always thought, I talked about this before, like myself, with myself in the mirror. I was like, bro, should you wear something? Should we start going like Stephen A, Farzi, like, you know, like sophisticated. Here I come in with coffee with Broads. My hair's like this. And I'm like, hey, boys, let's talk Phillies.
I think you look great. No, I tend to be a little bit, I like the button down. I always roll
if
my
you
sleeve.
Change
it's
just, yeah. For me.
No, these are my PJs. This is actually Velcro. These aren't even buttons right here. These are buttons, man.
Was that your outfit of the day? Like, I have to go to Target, babe. I'm running some errands today. Like, is that your outfit, or do I'm on camera. I'm going shirt.
Well, I generally wear button downs around the house. I'll wear like a t-shirt. But if I'm going out into the world, it's generally speaking a button down and a nice pair of slacks.
So you're telling me, like right now I got on a nice pair of Lululemon shorts, nice workout shorts.
Lovely.
Some high white Nike socks that I wear with some hot with some Nike shoes as well. But like I'll go athletic wear. If I'm going to Target, I'm not putting on a pair of slacks here. Like, would you do you think this is part of like, I don't know, if someone ran into you, you don't want to look like the idiot that screams on YouTube. Like, I'm just now I want to tap into your head. I thought I was ending the show. Now I need to get into your psyche.
Oh, the show's just starting now, you
baby. I just find, because like, I don't think I'd go, I'm putting on a dress shirt to go to Target. You go, I'm putting on a dress shirt to go to Target.
Yeah. It's the old mantra of like, when you see the world sees you type of thing. So look nice, I guess. I don't know. But that like, see, I say that, but it's like, I don't think that you look bad. I think that you look like you. I think I look like me when I have a button down shirt on and a pair of pants. Like, here's the thing. I don't ever really wear shorts. I'll wear shorts around the house. I'll wear shorts when I'm participating in athletic events, which doesn't really happen. But I'm generally like when golf pants came out. Oh, this whole Ben Simmons thing with like Ben Simmons working out and like people posting it all over the place would be like, this guy sucks. You know, like it shouldn't be breaking news that an athlete is working out. It should be breaking news that I'm working out is the way I look at it. But when it comes to wearing shorts, I don't ever wear shorts really around the house, but out in public, like when golf pants came out with that super nice thin material, that airy breezy material, I wear golf pants all the time. I always wear pants. I rarely ever wear shorts.
I'm glad that you always wear pants. That's a good sign.
I've grown.
Yeah, this is, I don't know. Thanks everybody so much for listening to this episode of Schmooze, and I'll catch you guys next time.